and welcome to the Keen Minds podcast, where we cover NBC's The Blacklist. This is episode 151, where we're covering season 10, episodes 10 through 17. I'm Jen, aka Takata Cycle.
And I am Tessa. And it's been a very long time since we recorded one of this.
We're both alive, we promise. We just decided to do a bulk episode.
Yes. You know, all in all, I'm very glad that we decided to do that, because I think otherwise, first, it would have been really short, and they would have been probably a bit bitchy.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very good word to use for it. It's, you know, we try to
remain optimists.
And also give something of value. I mean, we're not just doing this to hear ourselves speak. As someone that does the editing, I don't like to hear myself speak. So it's, you know, we like to try to give analysis. We like to try to give something back to
have
the show
fun.
That is. Yes,
as
have
Fred
fun.
Said, fun. Remember fun, Harold? Yeah. Well, that's what we try to do. But anyway, in this stretch, I thought that they were a varied kind of episodes qualities. Some that were, and some that were just okay, and two that were actually good that I enjoyed, and the ones that I would rewatch willingly. Let's put it that way. How about you?
I won't go as far as to say I would rewatch them willingly, but that's mostly because it's made me so sad that we've come this far away from what we started with. It's it's almost like I don't know what's going on here, because we used to joke about the continuity of things, and you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, they got this wrong, they got that wrong. Where's our continuity specialist? They seem to have forgotten which sister Red was dating.
Well, maybe he was sleeping with both.
But they haven't indicated that.
We even noted that it was one thing that maybe he was, when we were considering whether Katerina had a twin, and we were thinking maybe he was sleeping with both.
Well, but I'm saying for the canon of the show, he was sleeping with the other sister. And now he was just head over heels for her, which never really tracked in my mind. I saw zero chemistry there, but he was just floundering without her and this and that. And now, as we come back into this season, he's acting like the bodyguard was the woman that left him and that he was dating. And there was no indication of that. There was no mention of that. They have simply seemed to have forgotten.
Mirza was forgotten, like she doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Well, maybe Mirza is hanging out with Hudson the dog.
You know, so funny you should say Hudson the dog, because I was talking to someone, I was lamenting over Agnes with another friend in the fandom who will remain nameless because I haven't gotten permission to mention her name on here. But we were lamenting over Agnes and the fact that this is not, she's not necessarily the child of two, like, she's not Liz and Tom's child. Like, she's not a child of trauma. She just
seems a foundling.
I don't know what the deal is. Like, she seems to be suddenly just emotionally totally okay after everything she's been through. Nothing's wrong. It's almost like the Coopers have had her
provided up.
Well, they have, but she was, if she had been an infant when the Coopers took her in, I would totally understand that. I would be more behind where they have her. But she was what, six?
Well, considering that Liz was never with her, she probably doesn't have that many.
That's a possibility. But still, the statements that were being made were that, you know, essentially that this is not the child of Liz and Tom. She should be mischievous, if not, even if she's more, you know, emotionally stable, you know, than she might actually be in reality.
Oh, well.
But she's not very mischievous. She's over there doing cooking and all of this, you know, and I tend to agree with that. My statement to this other friend, I said, Agnes is the human version of Hudson. She's nothing like her parents, nothing like her younger self, and she doesn't match up. It's kind of like where they took the, I think, golden retriever, best I remember, they had for Hudson, or Labradoodle. I don't remember
It was
what,
like a and then put
but
a mod.
a very large, pretty dog.
Yeah, and
And
then
then
put a
they changed,
small
yeah, and then they changed
dog
it
of
to a
about
little.
the same color. Hey, it wasn't all different. The color was
Okay.
about right.
But it was the size of someone's shoe.
Yeah.
And then, but they acted like it was the exact same dog.
Yes.
Completely different. Nothing really about it. And so, okay, the similarity is Agnes has the same name and supposedly the same past. So I don't know. Maybe she's a plant so that Tom and Liz can be off on the beach together and they have the real Agnes. That's what I'm gonna say because this is absurd.
Hey, just get to whatever fantasy fits your thing.
Exactly. Gotta let live somehow. But to finish my thought, essentially the point being that they don't know what to do with her. They didn't know what to do with Hudson the
Oh,
dog
no, they
because
lost the Bible. I think Raymond Reddington took the Bible and
I think
left
they,
and the
you mean
Bible and the
Bogenkamp?
timeline.
Do you mean
Well,
Bogenkamp?
I don't know. Somebody took the Bible and the timeline and they totally just improvise now and throw
Well,
whatever.
apparently Dembe, who was very clearly to have said, and I may be a little bit feisty about this because I have an English lit degree, so I'm a little bit fixated on this, but Dembe was clearly said in season one to have an English lit degree, and he turns
Well, it's
around.
economy and history.
But it's not even that he just said a different degree. She asked him, "Do you have a lit degree?" And he went, "No, I just love to read." And I'm going, "Huh?" Just completely gone. And I.
Unless he was lying left and right, who knows? I did like one of the things that I like about the two episodes that I like. It was like somewhat they reminded me of the seasons where actually watching The Blacklist wasn't a chore. And that these days is a rare thing. So I enjoy those very much. But I used to watch the episodes, then rewatch on my own, then rewatch for the podcast. Nowadays, this second rewatch for the podcast, because it's been such a long time, failed. It didn't go well. Usually The Blacklist, you finish one episode, you go into the next one, and you're always like, you were always looking forward to it. You didn't feel, you almost have to stop yourself and say, okay, this is the fourth episode in a row. I better stop, take a break, do something else. This time it was like, oh my God, there is another one coming. Oh Lord. Oh,
Yeah, I kept a
but
running tally of because I watched them in blocks this past week, and I only watched them one time through. So if I missed details, apologies, folks. I could not. I couldn't spend.
I threw my back. So if you hear a groaning, that's it. It's not the ghost of Bokenkamp in here.
Oh, I. You know what?
It's the only reason I watch so many times.
I feel like I continuously need to apologize to poor John Bogenkamp because I blamed him for all the ills of this show.
And
And
it turned out
you
it
know,
wasn't
some of those ills may have been him. I'm not going to say they weren't because you just never know. He was the creator. But we saw once he was gone, all of the things that we disliked seemed to just explode into chaos. I feel like as I'm watching this, it's you would expect 10 seasons in to a show with deep mythology and a complicated and layered build up to the mystery. You would expect for the season 10 to be all the answers that we've been waiting for. So okay, maybe 8 and 9, 7, 8, and 9 were a little iffy because they were stretching it so thin because they were trying to fill time. I can say that. Okay. Well, I expected, like probably other fans that are still watching, to see season 10 pick up pace. And it just hasn't. They're struggling to tie this season together, reusing old material, and not in the way that we've always cheered them on for, in which they take situations, twist them around a little bit so that we're looking at, a distorted
prison.
mirror image. they are just simply reusing prior ideas, sometimes episode to episode. I'm trying to remember which one it was. There were two episodes back to back in here. They had the same, at least threads of the same villain. It was a corrupt company in which they were supposed to do a recall and didn't. It wasn't just a corrupt company, which might be a broad enough, you know,
that was
villain.
Hat trick.
But they both had corrupt companies that should have recalled something and did not. And they were villains for it. And don't get me wrong, if someone needs to recall it, they are a villain. I'm not saying that they're not, but I'm saying, come on, writers team. You can come up with better villains. You can come up with more interesting villains than repeating back to back for the episodes.
Blair Forster and the hat trick.
I will say, and I know that we're not going through in exactly, you know, a linear manner. I did not expect to like, what was her name?
Blair Foster.
I was going to say Forster wasn't quite right. Blair Foster. And that was Taylor Martin. So that makes sense. I liked Blair Foster. I like fixers in general. If a fixer is done right, a fixer can be very fascinating. And I really liked her.
And the Blacklister.
That's what I'm saying. Like, she
was very good.
Yeah, she was compelling. I really, really liked her. The episode itself was okay, but, you know, it's one of those on the better spectrum. But the problem that we've been running into is these feel like the typical run-of-the-mill procedural shows.
Law and Order.
Yeah, that they've been on for seasons and seasons. You don't have to watch them in a certain order. You're just, you tune in beginning to end. There's really no movement with the characters. There's really no movement with an overarching storyline. And it's season 10 of a mythology heavy show, final season. We all know it's the final season. It's been announced. And yet,
it's a filler season.
It is.
It's a filler season probably for the last three episodes. You know, maybe if we're generous, we put four episodes in there. But, you know, it's totally a filler season. There is very little. Let's start with the first one, which was 10-10, The Postman. That's the guy who was using the drones to put drugs and things into prison, and he was going to take revenge because
I will say I thought that was clever. But just to give credit where it's due, The Postman was by Justine Newbarth. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, Justine, and directed by Kevin Berlandi. And so those are the two that had ownership of this episode.
Did you like it?
It was all on the level, because when I started in with 10-10 in my block of watching, and when I watched, I went, okay, that wasn't bad. Like, it's nothing to write home about, but
exactly, yeah.
It was very much just a typical procedural. And when it started, and the guy pulls out the, I think it was an automatic weapon with an extended clip, because it looked like he was just pressing once and just a shower of bullets. So I mean, like, that was fun.
That was a fun scene.
Yeah, but I was so taken out of it because I'm going, there is no way. I mean, it's not even like a semi-auto where you could like have someone go in and purchase it. Like, those are illegal weapons in general. And well, so like, you can't just walk into a gun store and buy that, even if you have a clean record. Well,
but I like that scene.
But no, once they explained who the postman was and got into it, I was much more okay with it. And so
I enjoyed it.
They flipped me around on it.
Yeah. I liked the Blacklister. And this is the third episode that we have had in the entire series where we see throwbacks to Cooper's early years. We started with Alan Ray Ritkins in The Judge. Then we saw Daniel Hutton in Kuwait. And so now we got this guy that he sent to prison. And he had his reasonable doubts. And of course, it wasn't his fault. He was going with what he was given as a juror according to the rules. So he did okay. But I thought it was interesting that they're choosing to do that. But it felt like, so we've been there. Not that it felt like, oh, this is terrible. I don't want to watch it. But it felt like I would have liked something perhaps a bit different.
Well, not the final season. Not the tie up of all the loose ends that we have, of all the questions everybody has. Mm-hmm. And so that really goes back to the core for me of even the episodes that I might have enjoyed, that sort of comes back around for me, that this is season 10. Like, a lot of these, even like...
you expect to be picking up more pieces or something, or bringing something.
Yeah, even just nuggets. But like, for example, I actually really like Congressman Hudson. And I really like him, just like as a character, as a person.
Oh my
like,
God, I hate him.
I mean,
the character is well played. It give me a slimy feeling.
See, I'm the direct opposite, actually. So let me finish the thought here, and maybe you'll understand where I'm coming from. So, I mean, I think about it as from a viewer's point, you're like, okay, dude, just back off. You're sticking your nose in. We're essentially, we have been down this path before. We had the season 2 judge, a Dockerman, I think, something like that, that went after Liz and sat her down and said, I know what, huh? Dinner. Yeah, that's right. That sat her down and said, I know I'm not clear, but you're going to tell me everything. I'm putting you in prison. We had him. Then we had, there was another one. I have it somewhere in all my notes. Mm-hmm. There was another one in there that did nearly the same thing. We've had multiple people come in from the outside, from the government, and do this. Mm-hmm. What I like about Hudson, I like from a gen standpoint. Like, I don't want my tax money wasted. You know, mm-hmm. I don't tend to waste my own money, so I expect the government to have some semblance of responsibility with the money that I give them or that they take. And so, like, I would want my congressman to do that, to at least look into it. So in general, I actually really like him because they've worked really hard. He could be a very slimy character. It'd be very, very easy to make him the dwarf, I think, was the other guy, the cinder that came in. They could have easily made him a dwarf who was clearly there because he literally said, he expositioned himself into, I'm here because I want to make a splash on page one.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they made a very clear contrast between the two. You know, Hudson's there he is trying to do the right thing. And I appreciate his character for that. The problem is he's a repeat on things they've already done. And at the end of episode 17, when he finally gets pieces of the puzzle, he immediately makes this jump that says, that Red has corrupted the FBI. Yeah. Not that absurd.
It's absurd because he's saying that they told him this FBI agent who reminded me of Gail was...
Gail, thank you. I knew it was somebody I'd shake my head when I remembered who it was. Gail was the other one for that lineup of people that have already done this.
They're telling you that they've closed more than 200 cases. They're big cases. You would think, you know what? I don't know whose task force is that, but for my 200 million? Holy crap, you're doing well.
Exactly.
I mean, that's nothing for the government. That's a little drop in the ocean. And if for that money you're bringing me 200 cases a year, I would be asking, how about if I give you another 200, would you bring 400 of this a year? You know, forget about all the other stuff. If it's intelligence and you're keeping me safe and you're bringing 200 of these people a year, you know what? Go for it.
But for him to
know anything about it.
But for him to make that jump from, all right, I'm seeing all of this, and clearly Raymond Reddington has corrupted the FBI. No, I think it's easy writing. They needed him to say that, so they made him say that. And so it would have made more sense if Dorf had come in and said, well, you know, that's not going to make a splash. So it'd make a bigger splash if Red had taken over. So we're going to do that. That makes more sense. But you have a guy who's legitimately trying to track down, he's following the money. Which is what you're supposed to do if you're investigating something.
I'm not convinced that he's that squeaky. There's something about him that is giving me...
All right. Well, I'm team Hudson, your team not Hudson. So we'll see how that pans out at the end. My problem is, and I think if it had been a few seasons ago, I'd probably be with you on that. But I think that they have shallowed out their writing so badly. Well, I don't think they have it in them anymore to write a character with that sort of twist. No.
But let's continue with the man in the hat. Oh, there's something I want to say about the postman. I was very glad that they brought back Chess. It's been a very long time. And this whole thing started because Red lost his partner in chess and he was playing via mail. And then he brings his chess to Agnes and they're going to play chess. And I think to me, this is beginning to sound like Red will go on the run, but he will keep playing chess with Agnes via mail or something like that, and that would be their connection, as I can see that already being planted there. So I like that. Now the man in the hat by Daniel Saarinen, and this will be
and his... directed by Olenka Denisenko, I believe. And apologies again, Olenka, if I have mispronounced your name. I am probably not the one to be pronouncing these things.
Let's remind ourselves of the ones that Daniel Saron has written: The Gin, The Director, Mr. Solomon Conclusion, Susan Hargrave, Mato, Dr. Adrian Shaw Conclusion, Requiem, The Debt Collector, Mr. Kaplan Conclusion, Hannah Hayes, Katerina Rostova, Tuomi Ululak, Roanoke, Chemical Mary, The SPK, Helen Maggie, Marvin Gerard Conclusion Part 1, The Hyena. This is his last episode on the show.
And he's an excellent writer.
Yes. So I really like this one. It felt like I was back in the red, it was typical of him. You know, if he could choose between the carrot and the stick, he will always go for the carrot. He will always appeal to the good in people. It was really excellent. And we see him doing with the people in the store. You see it doing with Panna Baker when he offers, he had been like threatening her. And up to this point, when he realized that she was no longer threatable, he just offered her the same thing that he did with Cooper when he offered her the blackmail device that he had. And it got the results. But I really like this. I have some issues about the adopted mirror and the whole thing. But that's an arc that is going over several episodes. So I'm not putting it directly in this one. But kind of that's an overarching thing. But the episode itself, Red finding himself in a store, the whole thing, the cast of characters in the store, I loved the way that they solved the situation, the change. That was, and I knew that he was inside the store. When they said he went in the back, I'm like, no, he's not.
Yeah. So I have quite a bit to say about the mirror, or not the mirror and Sia arc. But as you said, that goes over several episodes. So I will get into that down the way. But like you, I very much enjoyed Red's portion of The Man in the Hat. I would also like to add, because we've talked before about Herbie, like we found Herbie kind of irritating.
Oh my God, the bathroom humor, I can't take it.
Okay, the talking about the kid is a bit much sometimes. But Herbie is growing on me. I don't know what it is. I don't think I'm paying close enough attention to be able to pinpoint what it is. I just know that I'm like, Herbie's back.
I think the actor is very likely.
I think that's it. Like, the actor's just very good. It's one of those roles that it could have gone very, very badly. The actor's just great, and he's lovable, and it's kind of like...
It's around 2.0. So
I think that Herbie's character, I don't know the actor's name that plays Herbie, but I think that character could have been very much like Glenn. So Glenn as a character could have been the most hated character. The character himself could have been irritating, but Clark was such a fantastic actor, and he did so much with that role that he made him one of the most beloved side characters of the Blacklist.
He played Red like a violin, and I think everybody appreciated that dose of humor. And they even it was almost like he was aware he was irritating and he didn't care. Like that was part of his thing.
Clark Middleton.
Yeah. I really enjoyed him.
But Herbie has been growing on me. I like him. But for the Man in the Hat in general, I very much enjoyed Red's part in it. Again, not a big fan of Sia's part. I think for as strong as Sia started, they just don't know what to do with her. They're trying to make her into Liz 2.0.
Well, there are very interesting things happening in this episode that are part of an arc. So let me just talk about one of them because it is, I think it's actually one of the few things that I'm liking about this season. Red erasing the immunity agreement. We talked about it a little bit with the last episode of the end of the Wujing arc. But it makes sense that he came in here. He gave him all these cases. Now he's erasing himself from there, like he didn't exist. And he gave them the Morgana Logistic Corporation, which was the backbone of his empire, while he saved everybody from it. So nobody would go to jail for that.
I have comments about that.
but the very interesting things is, as soon as he erased all of that and all mentions of them and his immunity agreement, I knew where they were going with this. He's going to be the last name on the Blacklist, which we know it is going to be. And because there is no connection, they cannot be traced and they cannot, he is protecting the Blacklist, the task force and Panna Baker by doing so. I thought it was very interesting and I like that. I like that it's closing that.
Yeah, I actually disagree with you. I think he seems to think he's protecting them, but in reality, he set them up to look super corrupt. And so with this Congressman Hudson going after them like he is, when he inevitably gets a hold of the files, there are no files to have. So it looks been...
The files are there. Well, but, all he did is but they don't, his name. They
I know.
Tell where the cases came from, but they know all the people that they arrested.
Or very large portions. But think about how the criminal justice system works. You have to be able to follow the evidence for it. So if they can't follow the evidence down and you have this vague...
But the evidence never mentioned him because that wasn't being an open court.
I know, but if they look back on it, it looks like they're corrupt now. It does.
I don't think so.
I do. It really paints them in a poor light, but the way Hudson's coming at them.
How can they be corrupt when they're bringing criminals to justice?
I'm just saying, you can be a cop that's willing to do anything to get who you think is dirty. What if the person's not dirty? What if the person's dirty, but you've made up evidence to get to them? Is that right?
But they're not. Red wasn't changing the evidence. All Red did was eliminate.
But there's
any references to a criminal informant, any reference to his name, and his immunity agreement.
But how did they find it? How did they start? How did they come across the case to begin with? How did it come across their desk? And Red provides them a lot of their evidence along the way. So when they presented it in court, they would have said, you know, our informant that we cannot give you the name of, you know, he's our
I don't think that they would, that I don't think, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But I disagree in that. I disagree with that.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Yeah. It's one of those Team Tessa, Team Jen.
All right. Where are you on this issue with Mira suddenly finding out she's not her mother and suddenly now she's not even my mom, but is now Mira? Like,
thank you. You just called out.
What erased all the years? And I like Harvey was telling, like, did you feel loved? Did you have a good childhood?
That's what I think I texted you about that. Exactly that. I said they have, it's almost like that episode or these sets of episodes in which she's searching down her past have gone through and systematically undone years of work, setting the groundwork for saying, you know, certain, having certain statements about family, about adoption, about how all of this comes about. With we had the issue with the Nowhere Bride was really where it stood out to me, because we got the Mira and Sia situation, which she just immediately starts calling her Mira as soon as she finds out she's adopted. And again, if she'd had a poor childhood, maybe that would make more sense. But Herbie comes out and says, were you loved? Did you enjoy your childhood? And she's like, yeah, until my mom died. Absolutely. So we know that she felt loved. And so essentially it's like she's saying, my mother lied to me. She's not blood related. Ergo, she lied. She's no longer my mother. That cuts ties immediately. And then we had the other issue with the Nowhere Bride with the fake husbands, which is a callback again to the whole Tom Keene arc. And you had these fake husbands. You had
Eloise and Aram.
Yeah. Which, because I think Tom and Liz are your base for that, and things, you know, circle around it. And so you had the first one who was just a scammer. There's no attachment there. He chooses the job. But then you have the second guy that I don't for the life of me remember his name. They said the wife's name a whole lot more. But the second guy who's like, no, I'm in love with her. I choose May. So he chooses May over the job. He chooses to protect her, to protect their marriage, to protect their life above the money he would receive from this woman. And so he makes that choice. But then when we get to the end scene in which May's like, I don't know anybody. What can I do? It's essentially set up to say, you know, there's not even a hope there. I'm not saying like she should immediately forgive this guy and just, I believe everything you're saying.
But you know what? At least he chose me.
Yeah. And say, okay, in setting it up, like she's open to a conversation, I think would have been a better ending for that episode. Essentially what it feels like they're saying this season, which undoes so much of what previous seasons have said, is a person cannot choose to be better than their lie. And they're dead to you once you find out they're lying. There is no growth. There is no continuing past that. They are the epitome of their worst mistake.
And that is what makes this season so painfully flat. Because the depth comes when, like most of things in the world, once you go past probably age 12, is that the world is rarely black and white. There is very rarely people who are all good and all bad. There is always something good in everything, always something bad. And dismissing people wholesale for one thing and all that, or pinging something as complex as family or relationship on a piece of DNA, it's really taking what was the most appealing part of a blacklist. The blacklist could show you a bad guy and show you a side of this person that was appealing, or make you feel that this person was doing it for a good reason or had something in it. That was the brilliance of the blacklist. It makes humor in everything, and it also gave you those moments that made you think, and those moments that made you think and realize and go deep into your beliefs. That speech that Red said about the Zealots, and, you know, I admire that in you, Harold, because you, every day you go there and you ask yourself, what's the right thing in this moment, becomes a zealot thing where people are black and white instantly for one thing they've done. And they're not your parents if it's not DNA, or if you didn't tell me that he was adopted. It's, you know what, maybe it just feels like you just made everybody into a flat villain of a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I think, and I understand that everybody's very worried about stepping incorrectly these days, and especially this fandom, we've all seen it over the years of, oh, this character made this massive mistake, you're condoning it if you like this character. And I'm sure that filters into writing rooms, because our world has become that way in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I understand the maybe hesitation of saying, like, you know, okay, this woman, and I don't think she should have just immediately taken the husband that she probably met not too long ago.
But she should think about this.
Yeah, open a door.
I'm very confused.
Open a door. Leave a door open. Allow for the hope there. But they slammed it closed. And just as a side note, it drove me crazy, because how are these women getting over here anyway? Because presumably they're coming over on fiance visas with people who are using fake names. And so I'm just like, all right. But that's neither here nor there. I think I was more insulted at the end of that episode than I was in a lot of them, just because it had the potential of being a very clever episode. And I think in a lot of ways it was.
But that was in the that's not the Man in the High. We're talking
No. I know, but we kind of shifted into that. Sorry, we shifted into the Nowhere Bride, because that's really where the whole Mira and Sia thing
she's when she discovered that she's not who she thinks she is. So basically we're taking the same theme as Tom went to, as
Liz
went through, and putting it different, and the shock, whatever it is. So that we can see.
All right, so we skipped over a couple. We're going to kind of backtrack here. And 1012 was Dr. Michael Abani. And so I have a lot of mixed emotions about this one, because I'm a big Dembe fan. I love Dembe. I love Hisham. I think that they took a character that they really, kind of like Tom, you know, they took a character that wasn't meant to be a long-lived character. And because the actor was phenomenal and the viewers loved him, they kept him on.
Supporting him.
Yeah, and he's just become a fan favorite. And I absolutely support that. But one of the questions that a lot of us have had for a lot of years now is, okay, we love that he has a daughter and a granddaughter, but who is the mother? Because it's just very much not in Dembe's character to necessarily abandon. And he didn't abandon his child. His daughter knew who he was. He protected her. So where is the mother? We knew there had to have been a story in which they split, and there had to have been a reason for the split. And it, you know, there had to have been a concrete reason, not just, he flaked and bye. You know, he's too good of a man for that. And so we've all been very curious about that. And we finally got the story of Issa. And she was beautiful, and she was wonderful, and she was clever. She was French.
She was from Cameroon.
Oh, Cameroon? Okay. Cameroon. Well, they met in Paris. And
yes,
so,
because she went to live with her father, who was French.
Okay.
And then when his father died, she didn't want to go back to Cameroon.
Yeah. And so there were a lot of very good things in this. But as we said at the beginning of the podcast, I was deeply offended by their retconning. So retconning is retracting on what has already been
retracted continuity.
Yeah, retracted continuity. And so in season one, they said Dembe has a literature degree. Great. That was established. It's established as canon. It was on television. It was aired. And then season 10, they come back and go, oh, psych. He was not. He had a different thing. And so that is what retconning is. It's not the writer's room at one. The writer's room at one point thought about killing Dembe off or killing Tom off. And so it's a retcon when they keep him on. That's inaccurate. That's not the term. No. I just wanted to say, because that's been said for years in the fandom.
Yeah, it's a kind of catch-all for I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only retroactive continuity they have in there. Dembe was supposed to be rescued in 1993 at age 14. There was no reason to change this, because nobody knows how old Isabella is. They could have had that to be at any time. Isabella could just look older. She didn't. She looked pretty young. So in 1983, Rempius rescued a 14-year-old in a basement in the brother in Nairobi. Great, they did the Nairobi ride. That's great. One out of three. But he was now in 1991 already, in 1992, he's already been rescued by Red and he's at university studying a completely different degree in economics.
Did they give us a date?
Yes, they.
I didn't see the date.
Yeah, okay. It says 1992. So it was. It's one of those things. I mean, economics and history really doesn't make any difference. He could have said, "Hey, I studied in literature and then added history and economics," yeah, because Red has commented he's really smart. They didn't need to recount the age because or the time. I don't know what exactly would change with that other than annoying me.
Well, they did the exact same thing with Tom's age because they had 1994, I think, and the kid was like, I don't know. 14. I mean, yeah, maybe. Like, that's what we got later. Yeah. But then they decide, oh, we forgot. We've cast Ryan like a year before this, before we threw that 1994 date out.
I think it was when they casted Scott and they realized
Scotty.
That wouldn't fit with the age, but
I'm saying they have a habit of doing that. But it's so frustrating because it's just like you said, there was no reason to do it. And the wonderful thing about Hisham is the man does not look his age.
No.
Like especially when he shapes his
head.
You cannot
in 10 years up and 10 years down, and you wouldn't even know the difference.
Exactly.
Same goes with the woman they cast as Aisha and the young Aisha. You could just take 5 years and not anybody would notice. I mean, there are people who have just baby faces. There are people who are, you just cannot tell. You cannot tell.
Ageless.
They chose actors. Very good chosen, by the way. Mm-hmm. They continue with excellent castings of younger versions of the
except
actors.
For Mira, and we can get into that later.
I thought that it was somewhat okay. She was, but at least she was petite.
She's not a good actress.
Well, but the at least the appearance part. I'm talking about appearance,
ish.
Not
ish.
I found it interesting that we got that and we realized that Denver did make that choice to go for Red, and I thought it was the wrong choice that he should have just stayed with Aisha and Ray. Of course, he didn't know at the time there was a child, but although there would be a child and she was pregnant. And I thought that her reasons for not wanting him in her life were pretty solid. And I respected that. And I respected that eventually Denver found a way to be on their lives without compromising them. Mm-hmm. But that choice is still one that bothers me. Why Demba choose Red, you know, over this great woman?
I think I understand that to a degree. I mean, Red saved him. And so, I mean, he was a father and a brother wrapped all in one. And there's something.
But even Red said why he stayed. He didn't stay because I saved him. He stayed because he wanted to show me that the world was not the dark place that I thought it to be.
But I think in a way
in the world and he want a living proof that the world was not as dark or something of the sort.
But in a way that's also saving him. Dembe has been trying to save his soul, not his physical being.
Mm. Yeah.
And so and I'm not even talking about like in a faith sense. I'm just saying like
give him the light, bring him to the light.
Exactly. I mean, yes, Dembe is his bodyguard and he has saved him physically many times, but I think that Dembe's place in the story and as Dembe sees it is essentially to save his soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so like that, to me, that makes sense. Like that, those two things can coexist very easily in my mind.
It was interesting that he already was doing dead drops for Red and all that. And And in a way, bringing a little bit of danger to Aisha by that.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was a good episode. It's the last episode. Noah Schechter is writing for The Blacklist, by the way. It was good. It wasn't compelling, but at least it kept my attention. And I like that we found out.
It's one of the few that's answered a question, though.
Yes.
I mean, and like, yes, maybe, thank you. Maybe we had some problems with the way they answered it.
Yes.
But at least they answered a question. It had some ties to the mythology. And so it was Noah Schuster. Sorry, guys. I'm derelict in my duties. It was Noah Schuster was the writer and Andrew McCarthy was the director for Michael Abani.
Yes, it was really I think you put the finger on the issue there. It provided an answer to a mythology question that we had on a beloved character and gave closure. And Denver still loves this woman, but he is choosing again to let her go. I think because she seems happy and he genuinely loved.
It broke my heart there at the end with him saying, you know, I'm glad he's okay. I'm glad you get to be with him. And she goes, are you now? And he's like, I'm glad he's okay. Because it just goes back to Dembe is a good man.
Mm-hmm.
And a good man is selfless. A good man will put her happiness above his own. And that's exactly what he did at the end. It's hard. It's not an easy choice to make, mm-hmm. but he did it. And in that moment, he was still able to do that. Now, you know, as a Dembe fan, I'm cheering for Michael to take a step aside and for those two to get back together because I'm cheering those kids on. But
but look at that. There was a very good contrast between Dembe choosing that because of his life not being the most conducive to happiness, and Red choosing to keep seeing Anne despite the danger he brought to her. And that was a very good contrast for me.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I like that parallel.
Yeah. How about The Sicilian Error of Color by the Coopers, who also gave us Lady Luck, Victoria Fenberg, Dr. Roberta Sand, Genuine Models, and The Dockery Affair.
And this one was directed by Mahesh Pillor. I really should not be the one pronouncing these names. Everyone knows I can't pronounce anything.
Yeah, it's okay.
So, a blanket apology to people that I mispronounce names of. I am the worst on pronunciations.
So this one, I found it interesting that they chose that name for it. You know, because I had that thing with the numbers. It doesn't have a number. But it is interesting to me that it's one of two unique objects in the world. And he obviously chose that to give Mira an answer. So he already knows Mira is looking for it.
You mean Sia?
Sia, yeah. About Mira. And he's getting this woman in so that he can give Sia a way to get in. But the whole thing kind of goes like, why are you doing that when you again are going to just tell her?
So I have a lot of complaints about the structure of this episode.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong. Episodes are hard. Finding a good structure is difficult. But the fact that I would have been much more okay if we saw the flashbacks with Mira as Sia was discovering them. If the audience found out along with Sia discovering them. Instead, we got a bunch of flashbacks, and then the next several episodes are Sia discovering in piecemeal these flashbacks. And so the audience gets the information before the character, and it felt weird and forced, and bringing the first key of finding the information in, the lady who the widow of Mira's Nigel, partner.
Nigel Sutton, yeah.
Yeah, which bizarrely in the next episode, essentially they sounded like they were estranged, even though she was madly in love with him, but they lived on different continents.
Yes, because he was CIA, because he was
MI6.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah,
it was just bizarre. But regardless, it seemed like very convenient writing to be able to like pin those together and bring it in. It was just, it was kind of bizarre. I mean,
before you go into the structure, because this is, this might help you going in there. There's a few items of interest in there. Red apparently had a double in the window, or he was doing a Home Alone thing and having like a little silhouette.
Well, he said he hired someone part-time for that.
Yeah. And which meanwhile, he's in Mexico. This is why, I mean, I generally like Red's monologues, but the one about the matador was so freaking boring. And besides, Red, who's a defender of animal rights, defending a bullfighting guy? Are you kidding me? You forgot about that stuff? Or that goes, oh, I'm sorry, that's a forgotten Bible. That's it.
They've forgotten a lot this season. Yeah. It's rough.
And then one interesting line in there, some people die following their parents' ambition. So it seems to me that in a way they're trying to heavy-handedly connect this to Liz dying to continue on the blacklist. And then again, all that Malik saying that Mira still feels like her mother. Excuse me, did you have another mother? Because as far as I know, Mira was your mother. Her getting killed didn't change that.
And that goes back to my complaint about the fact that we have spent seasons setting up. And I will out myself here. I am very particular on the adoption situation. That has a very special place in my heart personally, as a human being, as me, outside of fandom. And it was one of the first entries I had to the Keens was the fact that they were adopting, that they weren't being forced into adoption, but they were choosing adoption. And for me, that meant a lot to me personally for the characters. And so as we've talked about, we've seen adoption in beautiful lights. I mean, there was a lot that was screwed up in the Keens relationship when they were trying to adopt in season one. But we saw Sam, who was an excellent father to Liz, who did his best, who loved her dearly. And so the fact that we turn around and see is acting like this about Mira, I understand being hurt. I do. It's the question that every adoptive parent goes through. Do I tell my kid or don't I? And if I don't, they find out, are they like, how are they going to feel about that? Are they going to feel different? Are they, you know, there are a lot of questions that go into adoption.
And, in these particular circumstances.
But it's so bizarre. It's so forced. It is so forced. Like, we need this bit of drama. And instead of organically finding ways to cause tension, they're going for drama. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah. When I was watching this episode, I also look at the list of the other ones, and some of the ones that I've written I really like Lady Luck, because I adored the character. I love that, and I love that the daughter at the end, when you think she's gonna be, oh my god, daddy, I didn't know you were alive, is like, nope, we're continuing. I like that. And I didn't dislike the Dockery affair. I was okay with it. I found it entertaining and fun. And Roberta Sand was, I liked what some of the things they did there really a lot. But that, watching this episode unfold, I was just struck by its soap opera writing. It's over the head, obvious, expositionary, big drama fabricated more with music than with actual anything that is happening. You know, you're telling the people where to laugh. You're telling the people where they should be like, ah, and
it's not organic.
No. And it's a style of writing. And I'm not sure that it is, you know, maybe that's what they do. Maybe that's the directions they've been giving. I don't know. But I did make that connection of soap operas too. So you're not alone.
Yeah, it just, And this episode was the beginning, well, probably not the beginning, but it was certainly one of the standouts of something I saw running through several of these episodes. It was this one and 1017 also. This appearance that they have forgotten the fact that Rand lost everything a few seasons ago. He had to start completely over from scratch. He lost absolutely everything, started over from scratch. But when he goes in to talk to, I don't remember the individual's name that keeps all of it, that he has, do the
The party?
no,
Oh,
oh, such a
yes.
simple word.
Yes.
But they was watching over all of his
Mallet.
treasures,
Mallet.
huh?
Mallet. The
Okay.
woman. Mallet, yes.
Yeah. Blonde. But she made the comment that what was it? She said, I've watched over these for so long, or something like that. And I'm going, how long has he had stuff like this?
Oh,
Is
it
that
probably wasn't something that he was easy to sell.
but the fact that he had these things, that she was keeping them for him, and like these are things that he could have sold easily, I think.
Or couldn't at
Or would
least
have
said, I'm
lost.
so glad that we never had to sell this when you went through that bad patch.
Yeah,
It's
just
a
acknowledging.
line. It's one line that ties everything back.
Yep.
I had the buyers ready, and thank God we didn't have to. It just seems like that's what is it. The care in going to the Bible and looking for the stuff, it's gone. Like, what
Yeah.
happened? This. You just go there and tell me details so I can just push them in. That's what you have a continuity person, so that you can go to that person and ask for a detail, like
Yeah.
what kind of lit of degree does Dembe have,
Yeah.
or how come Rhett didn't sell these things, and a line, it doesn't have to be much, one line explains the whole thing. The Nowhere Bride. This is a Christina Boada. I am probably mispronounced this one too.
Yeah.
Is it the only episode she has written for the show?
And directed by Bethany Rooney. And so I wanted to like this one. I really did, because I think it's a very fascinating concept. I'm hesitant to call it antiquated, because I'm sure there are, like they said, cultures that still use it, but an older custom that is not practiced very often in the West. We'll put
I
it that
think it
way.
is even illegal. Denver said it's mostly
Yeah,
illegal.
I honestly hadn't thought twice about it, because nobody's done dowries here for many years. And so I thought they'd just fallen out of style. And it was a fascinating idea. I was really interested in that portion of it. But again, I think that all of that was undercut by what the ending of the episode actually said. The statement they were, because when you do an episode, when you put forth a statement, you're always stating something. There has to be a purpose, a moral purpose to the episode, that even if it's just like, here's the question you should be mulling over, and we're not giving you the answer, but here is the question. Like, there has to be something, or else it's just, what's the point of watching it? And for this one, they gave us the question and the answer. And again, to recap what I was saying earlier, it's that you're no better than the last lie you told, and there is no hope for you. There is no expectation of change, and you are just generally screwed. And for a show about espionage that at its core has espionage and folks that work under different names and different identities, and trying to find core identities, I think that's a real bad misstep for the show that used to be The Blacklist.
Yeah, especially when you're going for somebody falling for their target, the fake abduction that, you know, links to so many things in there. Yes. But they also have the issue here of, maybe I never watched The Blacklist, but now Red was sleeping with Weecha as he was pining for Mirza. He's like, I can't believe Mirza's gone. And he's, he's the love of a good woman and all that that he was saying in season 9. And now suddenly the egg-robbing one is gone. And now he's sleeping with Weecha, which is fine. I could see that he was sleeping with Weecha when they were both sharing in the thing. And he said, oh, no, we're roommates and we just share the bed. I could see that. But Mirza is not even mentioned. Like, how's your sister? Is she okay? Was she mad because you started sleeping with me?
He was pining after Mirza in season 9. Pining. Yeah. I think we talked about it, how we were just like, okay, Red, real interested when there was zero on camera, chemistry.
It was more with Weecha, but you just brush aside Mirza.
They just switched
last freaking season. It's not 9 seasons ago. It's last season. It was Mirza. Now today, she's forgotten. Yeah.
We have no explanation.
One line. You know what? I have loved both you and Mirza. I miss you so much. How is Mirza? You know, it doesn't take much. Especially when you're doing a show about this complicated relationship, the woman won, and you had already like the idea to make a complicated and compelling case. One of the guys didn't care anymore. He was like, "Yeah, I'm ready for the next one." The other one was like, "Oh no, I can't do this." So you could have exploited that to see what the different outcomes are. You know, one woman is heartbroken, but she found friends and she's going to keep at it. The other one could have said, oh, I don't know, I'm going to think about it and see whether there was something in there, at least to have that as to say. But one of the good things, finally, Red gives, here is where Red, after sending her to investigate, and all she got was that she had a partner, and the guy died. Then she asked politely, Red, can you just tell me this story? Like Liz did many, many times. And then Red just tell her the story.
Some stories can't be told. They have to be discovered.
Yeah, except that he just told her.
No, he didn't. That's the thing. Well, I guess he did later. But
yeah, he did in this episode.
That was my complaint a couple of episodes prior when we got all of the flashbacks. The audience was getting the information, but prior to the characters getting it.
Yeah.
And so that
we have no connection.
Yeah.
When she does.
It's that age old show don't tell. Well, you told. You told at that point.
Tell me something. If there was one flashback that should have been there, which one should it be? Because I would have chosen in this episode to put the flashback of Mira in the midst of bullets flying and all that, seeing this baby, grabbing the baby, and as Red said in the only line that got my attention, ran all the way to London and never let go. And that was part of Liz's fantasy. I grabbed my little girl's hand and I never let go. So that was the one flashback scene that would have been the emotional tie-in to Celia.
She should have been focused.
A life
yeah.
of horror. She could have died in that warehouse. She could have died of hunger in the streets.
I 100% agree.
Who got her and got her out of that, who sold her soul to the devil in order to get her to safety and keep her in safety, was her mother. And that's the one scene we didn't get a flashback.
I don't think we even needed to know about the partner. I'm not sure what the point of the partner is. Exactly what you just said. We should, the It goes back to what you remember in season 8 when Liz found the washer, and I think it was Sam was talking about the emotional touchstone. I loved that phrasing. It was in an interview, or I don't remember what it was, but someone made the comment that they needed an emotional touchstone for Liz to kind of ground her again. And I think that one of the many reasons that felt so off, a couple episodes prior, was that there was no tethering to the story happening today, other than, oh, well, this is Sia's mom. Okay, again, I 100 and 1,000% agree with you. We should have seen her finding Sia. We should have, you didn't need, and maybe they just should have had a stronger actress if she couldn't pull it off. Find someone different if that actress couldn't do the action scenes or something like that. I don't
Well,
know
he
the
didn't
reason
need
why they
anything
didn't do
except a
it.
woman in the midst of bullets
Well, I
just
mean,
getting her.
finding her. So, I don't know if our audience ever watched the show Chuck back in the early 2000s. It was phenomenal. It was a dramedy about, it had a lot of spy craft, and the leading lady in it was, I think she was CIA. And there was an episode in there of her finding, she was on a mission, she was going to get these bad guys, and after everybody was dead, there's this little baby crying. And she goes and she essentially steals the baby. And that's kind of what I feel like Mira must have done with Sia. So she found this child, she refused to give her up to the system that may or may not have served her well. There's no guarantee. So she took her herself against what was probably protocol for the CIA, took her in and protected her and took her as her own. But in Chuck, back in the early 2000s, NBC did it right. And they showed all of that. They showed in the flashbacks as we were finding out, because the character Sarah already knew what had happened. So we were seeing what she already knew. And we got to see all of those pieces.
It
But
makes a big difference because you make
it
a connection.
does. It
And
does. And we should have seen that with Mira going in, finding her, and the choices made, because otherwise,
that split of a second when you
right.
know that you're just taking that child, and you know in it, she knew in her heart she was not going to give it to the system.
And it would make so much sense because we saw what Tom went through in the system. The fact that Katarina did not, that Katarina left Liz with, or that, Red
With
and Katarina
Sam.
chose to leave Liz with Sam rather than giving her up to the system. Like, this has been a choice over and over and over again, and I agree with it. I mean, like, adopt these kids, get them into good homes. Don't leave them to the system to
And
let them get lost.
telling Sia about such a beginning,
Traumatic. Put potentially traumatic.
it is not traumatic. It's not only traumatic, but it's also like it puts Sia in a position to Mira that was not the right for a parent. A
Well,
child
like she
should
owes her
not feel
something.
like exactly, should not feel that I'm here for your charity,
Exactly.
or I'm this discard that nobody wanted, and it telling her it's not that, hey, you know what, I adopted you through the channels and whatever, your mom was, whatever, an unmarried mother, or she couldn't keep you, or wasn't the right time in her life, whatever reason.
Yeah.
It was, I found you the child of a prostitute with your parents up that abandoned or dead or whatever in a warehouse, and I took you. It would have, I mean,
You would have
maybe
died
something,
without me.
yeah, it would have been a bit of not the right upbringing that Mira will want for her kid. She will want it to grow up as what she really was,
It
a
goes back to
wanted
that
and
normal
loved
life.
kid.
Yeah, and that normal life that Liz always wanted and that Liz wanted for Agnes. Like, I love those strings, but we didn't.
Get them.
You hit the nail on the head, and I love it. It didn't. That is the scene we needed. They gave us the wrong scene. The scenes, and that's it. That's why I was so upset. It's not just the structure. It's the actual choice of what they chose to show us.
Yeah, especially as they're talking, as they're doing an episode of women tricked into marriage just to steal their money, in which the perpetrator was once a victim, failed by the system. You had so many things to pull here together to create a compelling episode, and it just fell flat. It wasn't bad.
It was flat. It was like they didn't know what statement they were making. I think I texted you about that. I don't remember if it was you or someone else. I said, do you think that they know what statement they made? Because I'm not confident that they, like most writers are like, well, you made a statement. I don't agree with the statement, but at least you knew what you were doing. I don't get the impression they realized what statement they made on this one.
No, it's obviously the choice of subject is important to the writer, but they fail the opportunities to connect it emotionally with the show, with the viewers. And frankly, if he's going to say some stories need to be discovered and then tell her, why didn't you tell that with Liz? Or this is your learning. Well, it was a little late, just a bit.
Hey everyone, it's Jen. When we recorded this, we were recording something like 8 episodes in one sitting, and so because it's taking so long to edit, and I don't know if you guys want to sit there for as many hours as it might turn out to be by the end of the editing, I'm splitting this into pieces. And so what we have here is episodes 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14. And so on the back half of it, we'll cover 15, 16, and 17. I'll try to have that out for you sometime this week, maybe next weekend. And until then, you know where you can find us. We're over on Tumblr and on Facebook. And Tessa's on Reddit. And you can listen to us on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.